When Ruth Reichel dines out, she often wears a wig, phony glasses, and uses an alias. She hides her identity because she's the New York Times restaurant critic. Soon, though, she'll be able to eat out without all that fuss. She's leaving the paper at the end of April to become editor-in-chief of Gourmet magazine. Terry Gross spoke with Ruth Reichel last summer after the publication of her memoir, Tender at the Bone, Growing Up at the Table. The book is just out in paperback. You might think Ruth Reichel's love of food dates back to her mother's wonderful home cooking, but you'd be wrong. Her mother was not only a terrible cook, as Reichel describes it, she was taste blind.
Well, she literally couldn't taste whether things were spoiled or not spoiled, good or, her taste was extremely limited. So when she, the first story in the book is about her waking my father up early in the morning and putting something into his mouth and having him taste it. And he said it was the single most disgusting thing he had ever encountered. And he really couldn't swallow it, and he spit it out, at which point my mother said, just as I thought, spoiled. And, she really didn't know whether it was spoiled. She really needed him to taste it, to figure out whether it was good or not. Of course, the fact that it had mold on the top might have given her a clue, but it didn't.
Do you have any memories of a particularly bad dish that she served you?
Well, I think that my whole interest in food came really early because my mother, at the age of three, she would put things on the table that, like butter that she'd left uncovered in the refrigerator for a week, which was nauseating. And I would say, Mom, I can't eat this. And she would taste it and say, tastes fine to me. And, when you're a child, you see that and you think, there's something wrong in the world. But I think the worst thing, and this isn't in the book but because it's so simple, but she would take the dregs of ice cream cartons and pour them into an ice tray and put them into the freezer and then serve them. So they would be freezer burned, mushy, and just really revolting. And then she would bring it out for a party and serve it.
Now, this is the kind of thing that might have ruined somebody when it comes to food. How did it get you to become a restaurant critic? How did it get you to become a food professional?
Well, I really felt that I was sort of shaped by my mother's handicap. It's the way the children of deaf people are probably more aware of sound. I became very aware of taste because I was so fascinated by the fact that my mother couldn't taste these things. And then in self-defense, I started cooking. My mother really would make these dreadful concoctions. She really prided herself on something called everything stew, where she would take everything in the refrigerator, all the leftovers, and put them all together. And one day I was watching her put in leftover turkey and broccoli and a little, can of mushroom soup. And she's throwing things in, and half an apple pie goes in. And she says, I sort of look at her and think, Mom. And she says, oh, it'll be fine. And then she starts throwing everything in. And, in defense, I started cooking because I didn't want to eat that.
Did you eat out a lot as a kid?
Yes. My parents were older when I was born. My dad was 50, my mother was 40, and they had a life. And they sort of expected me to fit into their life, and also because my mother was not the world's greatest cook. We fortunately went out a lot, and we lived in New York. And my mother, she used restaurants in a great way, even though she was taste blind. And she really wasn't interested in food. She was very interested in the theater of restaurants. So I grew up in the great days of Restaurant Associates when they were doing The Forum of the 12 Caesars and La Fonda del Sol and all these really exciting theatrical restaurants. And we didn't have a lot of money, so we wouldn't go eat in those restaurants, but we would go and have a drink and sit in the bar and look at the restaurant, and then we would go someplace cheap for dinner.
And talking about how your mother liked the theater of restaurants, you like to write about the kind of subculture within the restaurant. For example, a recent review, you wrote, If you are over 30, weigh more than 105 pounds, favor bright colors, or bite your fingernails, Bond Street could do you damage. No matter how confident you may be in the real world, it's hard to face an entire universe of thin, young, beautiful people dressed in black without wondering what you are doing there. Do you enjoy writing about the subculture that a restaurant seems to attract?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you need to know that. I mean, people say, well, how is the food? And that's only a piece of it. I mean, if you're walking into a restaurant, you want to know what the people are wearing, what they look like, how you're going to feel when you're there. And if you're walking into a really hip scene dressed like Grandma Moses, you're going to feel ridiculous. I love that whole side of restaurants, that whole ability you have to walk in and be somebody else for the time that you're there. You know, it's like meeting new people. You get to reinvent yourself. And that's one thing that restaurants do for us. It's fun.
Now, at the New York Times, you're kind of famous for using disguises when you're reviewing a restaurant so that you can't be spotted, so you can eat anonymously. What do you use, wigs?
Not only wigs. I keep buying new wigs. I've now got 11. And I do use those. I also have a lot of glasses. I have fake fingernails. I have whole outfits in different sizes. I mean, I'll sometimes put on like three pairs of pants, one over the other, or, you know, three skirts, so I look much larger than I am. I'm not normally a makeup person, but I've learned about makeup, and you can really do amazing things with, you can change the shape of your lips and, you know, change the color of your eyebrows, and I do all that stuff.
Do you pay cash or use for fake credit cards?
I use fake credit cards.
Does the Times help you get them?
No, I have figured out my own strategies for getting them. They don't want to know about how I do this. I also often ask the people I'm with to pay, and then I just write them a check.
Right.
But if you start pulling out wads of cash, it's a little... it's a giveaway. I mean, go out to a really expensive restaurant and pull out $500 in cash. Who carries that kind of money around?
Restaurant critics and Coke dealers.
Right.
Now, not every restaurant critic goes to such extremes to make sure they're not noticed. Why is it so important to you that you're not identified by the staff at the restaurant you're reviewing?
Well, I have a really strong belief that I am there to be your eyes and ears when you're at the restaurant. And I'm supposed to tell you what's going to happen to you, not what happens to the restaurant critic of the New York Times, who is getting the best table and the chef is, you know, cooking the food specially and the portions are getting bigger and so forth. I think it's really important for you to know what's going to happen to you. And you can't do that if you're sort of, you know, sashaying in as, you know, someone who's going to have a big economic impact on the restaurant.
Something you did that was pretty controversial, I think, I don't remember when this was exactly, but you took a star away from the restaurant in Le Cirque, which I guess had been, what, 4 stars, and you demoted it to 3? Do I have that right?
Yes, you have it right.
I don't
and
even know how
right
the star...
right after I came.
It was right after you came?
Yeah.
I don't even know how the star rating works and who determines what makes a restaurant 4 or 3 stars or whatever, so why don't we start with an explanation of that?
Well, the star system is very much up to whoever the critic is at the time. And 4 stars is the most that you can get. And it's a very exalted, there are only 6 4-star restaurants at the moment. And it's a very big deal for restaurants to
So when you
be,
say 4-star restaurant, this is like a New York Times 4-star restaurant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And it has a lot of weight to the restaurants. When they get a 4-star rating, it's a very big deal for them, and it brings them lots and lots and lots of business. To demote a restaurant from 3 stars to 2 stars is not such a big deal, but to demote it from 4 stars to 3 stars is, it's huge. This was right after I had arrived in New York 5 years ago. I had not had a star rating system at the LA Times where I'd been for 10 years. I wasn't that impressed with the star system at the time. I mean, I've since come to see how, if nothing else, how economically powerful it is for the restaurants. But I started going to Le Cirque, and they didn't know me, and I was not treated well. And everybody had always, you know, jumped up and down about what a great restaurant it was. And, you know, I had some really terrible experiences there. You know, I went once with another woman and we were made to wait 45 minutes at the bar for, you know, a supposedly non-smoking table, and we were still stuck in the smoking section. And when I asked for a wine list, a maitre d' came over and snatched it out of my hands after a minute and said, "I need that list," and he took it off to some man nearby and I couldn't get it back. And then I thought, well, I wonder, after I'd been there a few times, I thought, well, I wonder what will happen if, not if I make a reservation in my own name, but just if I go in undisguised. By then I knew he knew who I was. And sure enough, I go, and I have made the only reservation I could get was like 9:45. But I said, I think I'll go at 9 o'clock and just see what happens. And we get to the door, and there's a huge crowd waiting for tables. And the owner comes, he parts this crowd. It's like the Red Sea parting. And he comes through to me, and he pulls me forward and says, "The King of Spain is waiting in the bar, but your table is ready," and leads me to a table. And I thought, you know, this is too wonderful. I've just got to write about, you know, what happened to me as just me, an ordinary person, and then what happened to me as the restaurant critic of the New York Times, and write about the two experiences.
Now, I could see a restaurant easily explaining this by saying, well, of course we treat our regulars with special care. That's why people become regulars, because they know they're treated as like part of the family. We know what they like to eat. We know what their preferences are. We know whether they smoke or not. And it's lovely, like at a neighborhood restaurant, when you come in all the time, they say hello, they bring you the salad when you sit down, they know what you want. Everybody likes to be treated like a regular.
Absolutely, and regulars deserve to be treated. I mean, they've paid their dues, and they deserve to be treated better. On the other hand, that doesn't mean that ordinary people shouldn't be treated well.
Right.
And there's a real difference between, for instance, not every restaurant can have your table ready when you arrive. I mean, they can't always calculate how long people are going to stay at a table. An apology goes a long way. If they come up to you and say, "I'm so sorry that, can I give you a glass of wine? Can I somehow make this up to you?" You don't feel badly. You don't feel as if you've been dissed. On the other hand, if it's just, you know, "Oh, go wait over there. We'll let you know when your table is ready." It's a matter of attitude. And Le Cirque at that time was really known for not being particularly nice to ordinary people. I have to say that their attitude has changed dramatically.
Oh, have you changed their star rating?
I have. I mean, they reopened. They closed for a while, and they've reopened in a new location. And I went in many times, in many disguises, and they were wonderful. They were just wonderful. And I really felt that they had sort of seen that there was no point in not trying to be good to everyone.
Now, what's your approach to reviewing? How many times do you typically go to a restaurant? How do you order off the menu?
I go endlessly. I mean, I go until I really feel that I've eaten just about everything on the menu, that I've been there with a big group and a small group, on a weekend, on a weeknight, lunch and dinner. I've had every kind of, you know, combination that you can have. I mean, I'm very lucky. I work for an institution that is willing to put this kind of money into it. I would never go fewer than three times. I've gone as many as nine. And I really do try and, you know, get the entire range of experiences that you can have from a restaurant.
What kind of impact have you seen your reviews have for better and worse on restaurants?
Well, I felt very good about the Le Cirque thing. I mean, I really felt that that had had an impact, that taking that star away, which really stung. I mean, it's a wonderful restaurant. I mean, the food is terrific. But I think he really thought, you know, times are changing. I think I've seen that women are treated better. I don't think that's just up to me. But I think, you know, it's also changing times. Women are spending more money. They're more business women. The whole sort of cliche about women not chip-tipping so well is not true anymore. But I've certainly seen that change in the last few years. You know, I don't tend to go back to restaurants much after I've been there. So it's not that I, you know, can see the impact, mm-hmm. but I've certainly read, you know, restaurants saying, you know, they got 4 stars and, you know, they got 20,000 phone calls the next day.
Ruth Reichel spoke with Terry last summer. She starts her new job as editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine in May. Her memoir is called Tender at the Bone. This is Fresh Air.